American Contingency, how are you? Welcome back. This is going to be another episode of the American Contingency Podcast. We have a special guest here in studio today, none other than Dr. Pete Chambers. So without further ado, Doc, how are you?
Doing good. Happy to be alive.
Yeah, man. So you don't live here like the rest of, you know, the field craft guys and the AMCON folks, and you're up here visiting. Mm-hmm. So folks may have seen you on Instagram or in other products or whatever the case may be, but tell us a little bit about yourself, because your background is supremely interesting, and I know our community is going to want to hear about it.
Well, it turned out to be interesting. It started out real slow, but I'll start out with I'm really new to social media. Mm-hmm. Within the past, 3 months, I came to work with Fieldcraft as a contract person. So I'm not full-time. In order to be full-time, you typically, you know, you're living right there. I live, we'll say, a 17 to 27-hour drive away from here. In God's country, I call it, on the Red River between Texas and Oklahoma. So that's where I'm from. Picked up a job working for Fieldcraft through Kevin Owens and Mike. And Kevin I served with on active duty. And so the call came out and said, hey, we need somebody to help us on the medical side. A little bit about my background. I'm a physician, but I like to say I'm a grunt who became a physician. So I started out in 1980, early 80s, I won't say when, as a grunt, an 11 Bravo. That's an infantry guy in the Army for all you 03 people in the Marine Corps, of which I love, Semper Fi. I didn't have a clue where I was going to end up. All I knew is that my dad was a patriot and served in World War II in a really interesting capacity. We may get into that, but I was always driven by that. Mm-hmm. That. So I knew in high school I'm going in the military. I knew it, and he was happy about that. You know, he was from a Mediterranean area of the world, and my mom's a U.S. citizen or American. And then my dad became a citizen legally. And I had that to look at, and so I joined the military, came in, had no idea what I was going to do, but I wanted to carry a rifle. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool. I was 17 when I joined, 18 by the time I finished basic training, and the ride started there, and it got interesting, but I never thought it was. I was always looking for that grass is greener place,
yeah,
and it led me to places I never thought, medical school, you know, special operations, all these things that happened along the way. And I've got certain rules that I tell people when they ask me about the military, what can I do, how can I be where you're at? And I'm like, we may get into those. But, that's what created or started this whole thing, the NIDUS for it.
How long did you spend in the infantry?
I spent 10 years
okay.
in the infantry.
Yeah, so you weren't just like a, you know, 4 years for the GI Bill?
I didn't even know what that was,
yeah.
Be honest with you. And back then it was called the Veterans Education Assistance Program,
yep.
predecessor to the current GI Bill, which was GI Bill before that, but there was a
program. Yeah, it was Montgomery GI Bill before.
Yeah. And so, I didn't even know I was going to even go to college. Honestly, I thought I was going to be an enlisted guy the rest of my life. And then things happened along the way that changed a lot of that. I did part of that time, most of that time, in active duty, and then I went to the reserve side mm-hmm. of the house. I've served in all capacities in my 37 years on my leave and earning statement right now. I'm still in the Guard. I've served in all capacities, inactive, ready, reserve, active duty 3 times, guard twice, reserve once, and then, like I said, the IRR. So,
man, you've been all over the Army.
I've been in all aspects of it. I've watched it grow. I've watched it change. I've watched it get weaker in some ways. I've watched it get stronger in some ways.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of like from Ronald Reagan on, I'm a history book of what the Army has done and what I could speak with positive affirmation on its pluses and minuses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just having that much experience in time in uniform across the different types of service within the Army, because folks who have never served in any branch of the military, they may not be familiar with, you know, there's the active duty side. Those are the folks who their 9-to-5 job or, mm-hmm. you know, 24-hour a day job is to be soldiers. And then in the reserve side, you know, people sometimes joke that they're weekend warriors,
right.
but a lot of folks take it just as seriously in the reserves or in the Guard as the active duty folks, because they understand that this isn't their full-time job, right. so they have to take extra steps to be prepared in a way that is not afforded to somebody who isn't doing it every single day.
And we found that out in the GWAT, the Global yep. War on Terrorism. We found that out firsthand, that as guard people at the time, and then I went back on active. We got real busy real fast, and especially in a special forces unit, I tell people that are having done it on both active and guard side or reserves, it's the best kept secret in special forces, because you can go home to the house. Like, I can go back to Oklahoma, get on my ranch, work cattle, and then tomorrow get a call and say, hey, you know, 2 weeks from now we're going to be in, you know,
whatever country,
of which I've been in the military 56 countries in my life, you know, in one capacity or another, be it combat operation or a joint combined exchange training program or a, you know, just go, you know, hearts and minds. So I've done all of them, you know, humanitarian missions, you name it.
Yeah.
And we tomorrow could get the call. Right now I'm in the guard, and I'm literally, I would not be here today if we had our mission that got canceled because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to have to quarantine you on the way back in for whatever. And nowadays, I believe they're going to, hey, you've got to have a negative test. Well, I'm going to get a negative test downrange and then hope that that's, you know, accurate.
Still negative whenever you get back.
Right, it's still negative when you get back. Yeah. And even though I've had the shots and all that through the military as a provider. But anyway, that being said, that guard had got really busy after 9/11.
Yeah, that's I had family members that were in the National Guard in the early 2000s, like especially after the invasion of Iraq, that and then going into 05, 06, 07 during the surge, their National Guard units, like 45th ID, they were gone all the time.
Oklahoma National Guard, absolutely. What is it, the Thunderbird?
Yeah, division? Thunderbirds, I think, right. Is what they call it.
Shout out to them. I love those boys. They flew me around one trip. CH-47 unit downrange.
That's cool.
Yeah. You know, I got to speak one time on the floor of the Oklahoma City on the state, would be the Congress side, whatever. It's a representative side of the House. And I was the doctor for the day. And this is just a short side story. Doctor for the day. And I'm listening to them talk about pontificate between the left and the right. And I don't profess anything other than the common sense party. But I'm listening to them pontificate about how they're going to pull some money from the guard. And this was after my first real bad combat tour in Iraq. And I'd come home, and I was wounded. So I ended up, you know, needing a little time off. So I'm in there, and I'm the doc for the day. And I'm listening to this, and I'm talking to my representative. I'm like, are you listening to them? They're trying to take money away from the guard to give it to some entitlement program. Well, you can speak. Here, press the button. You're sworn in for the day as the doc. You can talk just as well as we can. I pressed the button. They looked at me like, who is this? And I'm wearing a white coat, right, because I got to look like a doctor.
Yeah, you're the doctor. I
typically look like a doctor, I'll tell you. Yeah, I might have a few bad habits like dipping and stuff, but I'm from Oklahoma. But anyway, I go, hey, I don't know if y'all remember, but there was this thing called World War II where every pot, where everything, where everybody grew a garden, where everybody lent an effort towards a war. Mm-hmm. And you may not know it right now, and this would be 2004, you may not know it right now, but there's a war going on. To those of us that are downrange, those people that I put in body bags, they didn't die from natural causes. And this is me, just exactly what I'm saying now, on the floor and crickets, like crickets. And I said, so we're at war. Your fellow state people from Oklahoma are at war right now, like downrange.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about taking money away from them? You know, so it was one of those things that I got real passionate about. So sure. I won't say heavy into politics, but I started talking to my congressman pretty regularly.
Right.
And, you know, the second district, you know, Mark, I can say his name. It's open source, Mark Wayne Mullen.
Yeah.
Talked to him regularly. And we've become good friends through the years because I would be, you know, like a chihuahua on his door talking about veterans' rights and veterans, you know, in the state level.
Right.
Forget about the federal level, but the state level, like what's important. So I've been able to work, you know, throwing that extra layer in there as we talk about traditional layers in the military of tactical, operational, strategic level.
Mm-hmm.
And then above that is the political level, you know, so geopolitical sometimes. So I've been able to see it all. And so now I can affect change, you know, by talking to the guy direct. And then he calls me and has my phone number and says, hey, doc, what do you think about this or that? So, you know, it's just a different phase. But
that's why it's extremely important. You know, we have a lot of American contingency community members who have asked, you know, how do we get involved in our local community? We're doing the preparedness thing. We have our food stores. We have our medical supplies. We have that piece of it. So what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And we've strongly encouraged folks, you know, not coming to the table as representatives from American contingency, but just members of your own community, get involved in your local school boards. See, pay attention to these city council races or your town council races, or you know, county commissioner elections. All of these things that really control they control your what impacts you in your daily life. It's fun and it's easy to look at the national level politics and say, you know, Senator so and so in the minority party introduced a bill to impeach President Biden, and it's like. Okay, I mean, yeah, that's fun to talk about, but is anything ever going to happen with it? Probably not.
It's disheartening looking at that level, and I've worked at that level too, and I'll tell you that we can't really affect change on that from a grassroots level as easily as we can on the state level.
Yes.
And if you're a states' rights person, which I am, and I don't know what party that is, but that's, like I said, that my common sense party, is affect change locally, and it'll trickle up, and, and it has to. And, you know, I've considered running for local this and that, and I just can't. I'm too busy right now with the Guard and stuff and getting deployed. You know, I always said if I lost both of my legs, I'll run for Congress in the state level. You know, but right now they haven't done that yet to me. I have pieces of metal in three of my four extremities from, you know, not moving out of the way quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you that I still have a passion for community service. And if you're a... public servant, which I guess a military guy is. I don't know, or gal.
I'd say so.
We're public servants. You know, we protect the Constitution and the people of America, right? Or you could say America. but if you truly believe in that, and if you have a passion for something greater than yourself, right, and you truly do, then money and all those things really don't matter. And what really matters is what happens at the tactical level between us as people that go, hey, okay, we're going to go kick a door. We're going to go do a humanitarian mission in a country which could turn into a fight, and they have, you know, that's a sucker punch, it happens. But if you truly believe in those things, then work at your tactical level, your local level, and you can affect change. Even as a single person guy talking to his congressman in his ear all the time, but you have to speak with authority, intelligence, and be willing to debate and not just say my way is the only way.
Yeah,
my way is a way, and I understand there's a need for yin and yang and you know, in this circle of life that we live in this Zen thing, but there's also good and evil out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see good and evil firsthand on range. We don't see it in America as much.
It's not as in your face.
It's not as in your face.
There's a little more culture creating a buffer between what that base evil
absolutely.
Action may be and then what it's expressed in.
Nail on the head. Yeah.
So community service is one of those things we've talked about, like with AMCON, because, you know, folks are they're getting together, they're organizing their groups, they're finding, you know, getting their call rosters and personalities identified. It's great stuff. So then next steps, Mike put out the guidance. If it's as simple as something as going and picking out trash on a highway, picking up litter at a community park, whatever the case may be, something to show that you're a positive force for good in your community. Really, I know for myself in the community service experiences that I've had growing up, it's been really rewarding. And some of those community service style experiences occurred even in the military. Like I was a PSYOP guy, so I was often attached to a SF team or a SEAL team or a SEAL platoon or whatever the case may have been. And we would get to do things like, you know, start radio literacy programs where you know, you set up a radio station, you give out a shitload of free radios that the kids can tune in, you know, every day from 10 to 12 and learn how to count. They can learn how to read a little bit. They can learn Pashto, the language that they've been speaking the entire time, but they don't have no idea what it looks like. So I think that those experiences that you are afforded in a special operations environment or in a special operations MOS are really unique, but all of that experience and knowledge doesn't have to end once you, like I'm retired now.
Right.
You're not retired yet, but you know. Soon. Yeah. And well-deserved. I mean, geez, I only did 10 years. So when you tell me you did 37, I'm just like, God, man, we ain't cut from the same cloth. You're tougher than a $2 steak, I guess, right? But
that'd be a steak from I won't badmouth any state. I'll just say that steaks in Oklahoma are probably the best in my book. But anyway.
They just taste a little better.
They taste a little better. Marbling is there. Yeah.
So since we're on the topic of food, Kevin Estella and I, last week, we sat down and talked about you know, what he carries from a survival standpoint on his own person and all that. And one of the topics that had been brought up was fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you can't even get from your couch to your mailbox without huffing and puffing, maybe there's an issue. You can have all the AR-15s ammunition in stores in the world. bleeding over here. Hopefully we can't see that. But what I know you focus in a lot on your social media on the fitness aspects and the mindset related to that.
Okay, so yeah, I'll go with that. So the first thing is, I'd like to shout out to Kevin Estella, because he's an asset to the Fieldcraft team.
Absolutely.
He truly is. What a great asset this guy is coming in. So my focus on the Fieldcraft is Fieldcraft Survival Fit Doc. Mm-hmm. All right, so it's a long name for an Instagram. And my deal is I put out content on a workout, but it's a functional fitness workout. Mm-hmm. On nutrition sometimes. I get direct questions, and I'll do that. There'll be more of that coming as the need be. But in 2 months of me really doing this as a contractor, I focus on that. I focus on mindset a lot, but a lot of that mindset goes over to fitness, because without fitness, you can't have that good triangle, I like to say, of something I learned way back in the day as a grunt, but then carried on as a special operations physician and as an 18 Alpha, which is a special forces officer, is the body, the mind, and the spirit, right? So all three are required, the minimum, for legs on a bar stool. I'm going there. But if you don't have those three at least, and you can have more, family, that's a good one there too. Now you got four and you're really solid.
Yeah.
But if you got at least those three, or if you don't have faith but you got family, there's still three, right? Body, take care of your body, mm-hmm. physical fitness. You don't have to be like some of these. My son is awesome. I mean, he's going to be an 18 series guy someday, and he's working on it on the 18 x-ray program. He's still in college, but he's going to do that. But he's a fitness guru. State of Oklahoma, 4x400 champion, his team. I mean, great athlete.
Awesome.
I'm proud of him, from a town of 3,000 people to go to state and whoop all those
people. That's a big deal.
From the city and from Tulsa. That was pretty cool. But, it was a joy to watch him run around that last leg, and they just wanted to puke. But he, that team did really well.
Yeah.
But that fitness piece is so, so important. And tonight I'm going to be talking about, this is going to be broadcast a little later, but tonight I'm going to be talking about this part two of my series on fear and the study of fear, mm-hmm. and how that works, and how our body is a machine, and it's a fear accumulator. That's what Stephen Pressfield in his book Gates of Fire talked about, and a shout out to him. He's kind of helped me along the way with some things, direct message. But that fear accumulator is physiologically driven. So we have these things called adrenal glands, and they sit on top of our kidneys, and they pump out epinephrine and norepinephrine, otherwise known as adrenaline and noradrenaline. So when you have fear, fight or flight in your frontal lobe, and it detects something bad's about to happen, so just like an animal, you're going to either fight or flight. One mm-hmm. of the two, hopefully not freeze, because it's the third one. But we don't want to talk about that, because we're not going there. I'm a positive person. So you can fight or flight, and you can survive. So when those things happen and they get released, and if your conditional response is that I'm going to freeze every time, or I'm going to shut down, or I'm going to do whatever, let's change that. Okay, mm-hmm. Part of that is physical fitness, because when you're physically fit, your body's physiological response will not be as leaning towards that adrenaline dump, but more on, okay, an adrenaline dump, which is useful. It'll mm-hmm. give you some really good acuity type things. If you go too far, you get tunnel vision, you get auditory exclusion, you get all these things that can happen that really are detrimental to surviving.
Right.
But if you can control it, if you can learn to control it through stress inoculation training, which is what we do in special operations, mm-hmm. same thing as you. When we do those kind of training, and you got some, people wonder, why is your drill sergeant yelling at you all the time? Well, he's doing it for a reason. Like, my guys were Vietnam vets when I went through in 83. All right, so those dudes were serious about us surviving on the battlefield.
Yeah.
They had been through a lot. And there was a lot of screaming going on. And there was a lot of physical punishment. Mm-hmm. But there was a reason for it, okay? Because they realized that if we don't prepare these guys, and then we went to the 80s and nothing really happened in our world, but we didn't know. We're only preparing for war.
Right.
But they realized that if we stress inoculate these cats, they might survive.
Yeah, the whenever you are in a combat situation, right. If you're used to that, exactly like you're saying, it's...
You're not going to rise to the occasion. You're going to fall back to your training.
Yeah.
We say that all the time, but
exactly.
It's very true. The other thing that's true is that some of the simple things I learned, in that physically wise, when we're talking about physical, is that if your body can't get you, and your body is a machine, and it's a weapon system. Mm-hmm. I call it a weapon system. It's what runs all these little ancillary weapon systems called M4s, pistols, et cetera. If you can't run this, you can't run 50 yards. I don't care if you've got 70,000 rounds in your house. and you got 45 different types of ARs and a 6.5 Creedmoor and every variation. You know, I've got a precision one, I've got a Creedmoor, I've got a surgeon action. I don't care, because I could take my pistol, walk to your house, and pop you on the head with it and take all your ammo.
Yeah.
Because you can't run 50 yards. And I'm not saying you got to run 50 yards in a time that's Olympic athlete, but you got to be able to move, because there are four things we got to do: shoot, move, communicate, medicate. Mm-hmm. So if I can't shoot, that's important. But if I can't move, that's way more important.
Absolutely.
In fight or flight, because if you can fight, that's great. But if you got, if they outmaneuver you and they flank you, they do, you know, Hollywood, or we call it what, California and New York. They come around one side or the other, you know, left or right based on the, you know, mm-hmm. the United States. Well, then you can't move, and now you can't do one of the four basic things: communicate. Can you talk amongst each other? Be it in the sense like Oklahoma, where a tornado shuts down this whole community for a while, and then my neighborhood watch program goes into effect and says, okay, we all got CB radios and we can talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people talk with ham radios, et cetera. But if you can't communicate, then you can't do all this, all four. And if you can't medicate, take care of something that happens, then it will. It's like rodeo.
Yeah.
Rodeo is bull riding, especially. It's not if, it's when and how bad, right? Same thing with jumping out of planes. I've jumped out of some planes and I've been broken leg, broken back twice. Luckily not transected and paralyzed, but it's not if, it's when and how.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, because Murphy shows up, people get hurt, bullets are faster than people. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. And, you know, my job was to plug holes and bullets on people. But there you go. Back to fitness is one of the baselines. And the baselines to me is fitness is interwoven with mindset. And then all these other things are like this, okay, on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting skills, moving skills, communication skills, medical skills, et cetera. Mindset and fitness are right here. Without yeah. those two interwoven, none of these subthings can be as efficient as you could be.
Right. It's that ground level stuff you need to think about, like what's right. going on in your own head. Are you able to collect and gather your own thoughts? Are you able to collect and gather your own body
right.
to then be more effective? Because you're gonna have to move to treat a patient. Most likely.
And carry them off the X.
Exactly. That's one of the things that I know in the military. I remember some of my favorite training events, we would turn them into PT events too, was
mm-hmm. man down drill kind of.
Yep, man down drill stuff. And then, you know, if you're gonna spend all day walking with a heavy backpack on, you know, bring some medical training aids, some IV right. bags, some care under fire type right. tools right. that you could then practice that a lower grade of, but a type of stress inoculation where you're physically can be exhausted, you know.
And those training days suck, but they
do.
Don't. They suck, but they don't.
You can look back on them and think about all the things that you learned. Like in the moment, you know, it's like, of course, it's 38 degrees and piss uh-huh. pouring rain uh-huh. outside in North Carolina, and I just yeah. stepped in a giant ant pile uh-huh. at Camp McCall because, of course.
Hit by one of those little pine trees in my shin about 7,000 times. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, you know exactly. Yeah, that's familiar stomping uh-huh. grounds. But simply exposing yourself to that type of training. Oh. We use the example of, you know, if you walk around the block once, okay, now you're going to walk around the block twice. Right. And being purposeful and diligent about right. that, some folks need a regimented training schedule, a regimented mm-hmm. training plan. Other folks just need to have something interesting to go outside, give them a reason right. to go out and start moving and getting their bodies moving again, you know, kicking a ball around with the neighborhood kids. Maybe, depending on where you live, might not be able to with COVID anymore, but, you know, don't let things that are going on in the political world or in the media world prevent you from right. taking care of yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
You can get those functional fitness workouts that you mm-hmm. post. A lot of them are, you know, body weight mm-hmm. exercises yeah. and just movements. And, you know, there's folks out there who they swear up and down by yoga and incorporating active stretching into absolutely. Their lives, or active mobility exercises. And I know in the military, so I didn't join the Army till 2008. So I came in, you know, significantly after you. And then for the first 5 years of my career, there was no focus on real mobility style exercise. It wasn't until we had the Thor 3 program
right.
that got, you know, blasted out across SOCOM, I guess.
Yes.
And it really revolutionized like the way people were starting to think. CrossFit had been around for a few years, mm-hmm. but individual teams and individual members of teams would go and, you know, join their local gym and be fitness freaks about it. But it wasn't institutionalized or, you know, command driven to show the rest of the community that, like, look, yeah, it's great. You have a 500 PT score, whatever.
Less push-ups and pull-ups.
Yeah. You're doing the minimum here, but you know that's not going to help you carry an 80-pound ruck for 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, and the injury prevention piece in how we learned to train differently was it. I wish I had known that in 2008 when I first came in. I could have not had a lot of the same injuries that wound up ending my career for silliness. Or, you know, ego-driven things like, okay, Dustin, maybe you don't need to shoulder fire a 240 all the time. Like, you know, it's okay to be prone and supported sometimes. You don't have to do that.
Work smarter.
Yes.
Not harder.
Yeah, otherwise your arthritis is coming for you.
There you go. So. And here's the deal. You know, I'm 75 years old. No, just kidding. I am. I'm 56 now. And I'm not as good as I once was. Mm-hmm. Paraphrasing a song here, but mm-hmm. I'm as good once as I ever was. Okay. So to do that, you got to stay somewhat mobile, mm-hmm. flexible, functionally fit, a little cardiovascular in there. You don't have to be a marathon runner. I quit doing marathons a long time ago because I don't have to anymore.
Sure.
But I still know that if I had to put a pack on and go across the Wasatch Range out here, mm-hmm. I probably could do it. I'll pay the price. But I watched young kids when I went to the Q course, and I was a lot older when I went. And I watched young kids take off on a 12-mile ruck with a standard weight and all that, and they would run. And at about 7 miles, because I learned something from a Vietnam vet who taught me how to ruck, all right, and how to pack my ruck correctly, and mm-hmm. all those things that they didn't tell these guys in the selection. And all of a sudden, at 7 miles, every single time I'd pass them. Every time, and they're like, here's that old guy. They don't know anything about me. They're like, you're just some old guy, and you're passing us. What's going on here? Why is this old guy? And I would pass them at 7 miles consistently every time, doing my little count on my left leg, you know, count so mm-hmm. much. And it was that tortoise and the hare thing. It was that old bull, young bull thing. Mm-hmm. It was that, you know, work hard, smarter, not harder thing. And I was able to show up on the X ready to go
right.
and not lay down on the ground and go, oh, God. Because if you do a 12-mile ruck with that requisite weight and you can't fight when you get there, then what good are you?
Exactly.
And that's what selection is all about.
Yeah.
It's that smarter guy. It's not the biggest guy. It's not the fastest guy. It's not the guy that can do it in an hour and a half. It's the guy that can do it in 3 hours and show up on the X ready to fight.
Combat effective.
And that's so important. And that's why you got to think about, what's my mission? My mission isn't to be the first guy in. Mm-hmm. My mission is to be able to get to the X, fight, and get off the X. Sometimes carrying a guy. And I've had to do that.
Yeah.
That's my mission. So think about your mission and what it is you're trying to do. And that's functional fitness. That's all it is. Yeah. It's that easy. I got guys that can destroy me on long-range competitions. Mm-hmm. I used to do those when Kevin Owens was my mentor in the long-range world. And he took me to my first competition, and I did pretty good for, you know, a new guy. And then I went out and did, actually out here in Utah, did a 24-hour sniper challenge out of 40 groups. I think I came in with my teammate, like number 21.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But amongst a crowd of people that are like, know what they're doing. Right, but then I did some bench shooting against some guys that were, no lie, 300 pounds, who could outshoot me all day long because they reloaded all their stuff. They had Gucci stuff. They had Gucci weapons. And here I am with an FN bolt action that Kevin loaned me, 308. And I'm like keeping up with them, but they're destroying me overall.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, well, pick that up and go across this mountain with me and let's see how you do.
And then shoot.
So it's a different world.
Right. You know?
Competition is totally different than real world. Competition. Mm-hmm. Shooting a flat range is totally different than the real world. Mm-hmm. We train on flat range a lot to enhance our skill sets and to enhance muscle memory. But truly, until you get into something that's obtuse or something that's weird or just angles and tactics, mm-hmm. you're not really training for war.
It's true.
You're training for tactical shooting on a flat range.
That reminded me of something. Have you ever been to Poland?
Yes.
Yeah, so my last trip was to Poland. Mm-hmm. I got to go work with the Polish PSYOP guys a little bit.
Were the guys, the Grom?
Grom and JWK.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
So
Yakshamash, that's how they say hello. Yeah, yep. I remember that.
So they were, we went to a couple of their qualification ranges, mm-hmm. and to see the difference between the U.S. style range and then the Polish style range, like when I was there, for the rifle, so they have an AK style rifle that they mm-hmm. use, and and when you get into the firing position, you're actually down in a pit like you see on old, or they still have them at ranges, the firing position mm-hmm. where you used to be standing supported, mm-hmm. and so you shoot from there through a wooden barrier and then through a second wooden barrier, and then the target would be there. So you're right. basically shooting through two windows right. at, you know, various ranges before you hit the target. And visually it's strange to look at, but
off, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But when you start to think about like the types of environments that the Poles have historically had to fight in, it's been a lot of urban combat. They've had, of course, combat in the right. northeastern part of the country and in the northwest where it's more rural. Like where we lived in a town called Bydgoszcz, but it was kind of weird to look at. And then we went to their pistol qualification range, mm-hmm. and it wasn't, I'm going to stand here, shoot five rounds standing, three rounds kneeling, one round, whatever the U.S. Course of fire
course
is.
Fire, right.
But sorry, I've been retired for a couple of years. It's all coming back to me. Yeah. But the Polish pistol range was like you would shoot, and then you would have to run up to another firing position, shoot again, move up to another firing position. So it was a dynamic.
So it incorporated movement.
It incorporated right. movement into the range, and which for depth. A lot of, yes.
And width, yeah.
Because you have to be able to maneuver under fire or in combat situations. And I find it interesting that, you know, I'm sure for liability reasons and insurance reasons mm-hmm. or whatever, the U.S. tends to stray away from that in certain training environments or in like Fort Bragg, a lot of training environments. To move on a range, you had to have we had to have you, Doc.
Yeah, to be able to move on a range. And a team and a commanding general's signature
yes.
for a risk assessment
for a transition range.
Hey, train like you fight, man.
Yeah, yeah, that's the bureaucracy is real,
and that's why in SOF we still have to do those qualifications mm-hmm. to maintain currency in the Army system, mm-hmm. the Army. But then we also have our own shooting styles and methods that we do. For example, I got one coming up where it's the administrative side of the house, people that work for us mm-hmm. all get to go and do this kind of shooting in an urban environment and practice that. And I'm not going to say the name. I don't know if it's
sure.
tech or not, but
yeah.
it's something that we do. And then there's another level for the 18 series guys, which are the SF, you know, long tabbers, we'll call it, the Green Berets. And then there's even a higher level mm-hmm. for different tiered systems. So based upon what your mission is and what you could expect, so the admin guys that are with us and the other ancillary personnel who are all soldiers and great Americans and are working in a SOF unit don't have the same luxury of going to the Q course,
mm-hmm.
but they still have the same luxury of learning how to operate in that environment because you train like you fight.
Yeah.
You know, and they realize that and they go, okay, and I've been there. I've been there downrange and had a cook take out a bad guy before he killed me,
mm-hmm.
a cook. All right. Hey, thank God. He's a great American,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bronze Star with V device.
Still good a soldier.
Still yeah. a soldier. It doesn't matter because when you're side by side, the best medicine on the battlefield is superior firepower, not mm-hmm. me. All right? That is true.
It is true.
That's true. That's why they're like, hey, Doc, you may be a non-combatant. Well, I'm like, no, that's the chaplain. I can still carry a weapon. Now, according to Geneva Convention, I can't instigate fire, but I can protect myself and my men,
mm-hmm.
my people, because I don't want to be going out there and plugging a hole.
No.
No, so my firepower is important, especially because I was a pretty good shooter because I was an old country boy who knew how to shoot.
Absolutely.
So that's important. But we trained like we fought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still do. I still do in the guard sense in a SOF unit. You know, so.
So I think that brings up a really interesting topic is training like you fight, having the appropriate equipment, and if mm-hmm. you don't have the equipment, adapting that equipment.
Right.
You are a physician.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of folks who are looking for advice in the medical training world, resources, mm-hmm. top five tips, basic things that they can right. apply in their own group, not as a holistic training plan, but just things to keep in mind.
Right.
So what advice would you have for folks? Because this is not, like we've talked a lot about combat, but you know,
okay.
this
Fair
is
enough. Yeah, good question.
Largely the scenarios that folks are gonna run into is like, I went hiking the other day, right.
Perfect,
you know, one of the dogs jerked me through a patch of snow and I slipped and fell, you know, 5-10 feet, whatever. Could have been catastrophic. Mm-hmm. Could have broken my neck, cracked my head open on a rock, whatever.
Okay.
So
I'm going to say this. I'll start out with this is 90% of what I did downrange as a physician, other than combat stuff,
mm-hmm.
was what's called disease of non-battle injury, DNBI we call it. That means cuts, scrapes, infections, strains, broken bones, training. Had a guy tear his bicep, one of my 18 Deltas, my medics, doing an arm wrestling competition. So I got that. You know, he wanted to go back to work, but I'm like, your arm's, like, not working, bro.
Yeah.
Got to go get some surgery and then come back, which is not helping me because now I've got to go on the X for you.
Yeah, like, now you're down a Bravo.
And I'm down a Bravo, and me as a good surgeon, I'm like, well, I'll take your spot, and I'll go down with your team. And luckily, I got to go do that. And then got yelled at by the the SOTF commander at that time, who said, where's Doc Chambers? And they said, and they're sitting there in the talk, the Tactical Operations Center, and they're watching what we used to call Kill TV, which is a bunch of TV screens up front, and everybody's watching this operation go on from a ISR platform, you know, looking down from the sky, and they're watching this. The PA that was sitting in my chair goes, well, see that CH-47 right there? Doc's on that. He'll be the first one to land. And I got chewed out, but I've been chewed out before.
Sure.
So
okay. What are you going to do, yell at me?
I'll pull something from Inglourious Bastards. I've been chewed out before. Yeah, but the point is that you don't see that combat injury all the time back home. And we're talking about medical stuff. So I talk about layering of systems, right? So when we layer our weapon systems in the shooting sense, and people may be able to understand this a little better than I'll explain the medical. When we layer a weapon system, I'm going to start with, like, my sniper system maybe. And then I'm going to go back to my, if I'm not a designated marksman and I have a 260 or a 6.5, you know, with a gas gun, that could reach out there, but also switch over to a different optic and be up close. Okay, I don't have that. So then my next layer system, my M4, then my pistol, then my knife, then I'm going to go hands-on. That's a layering of offensive-type techniques. Layering in a medical technique is I have my IFAC on me. Okay, that's for, like, my last ditch. Okay, this is on me. I'm laying here, and somebody's got to come and help me.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I've had to put a tourniquet on myself from my own IFAC before. And that happens, but you got to get back in that fight because care under fire is the first phase of tactical combat casualty care, and that is care under fire.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a word in there that you got to remember. So that's that layer, right? Okay. But I still got to shoot first because I got to eliminate the enemy and then put that thing on or get it on there while I'm doing it. Sometimes that happens. Then it's the truck bag or it's the medic bag, and you work your way up to the aid station and you work your way up to the cache, the combat surgical hospital, and it's a layering of systems. So in your own personal life, a truck bag, a go bag in your car with medical equipment in it, and know how to use it.
Right.
Pay attention. You know, Fieldcraft does a great job of training people on critical incidents aid course. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just basic stuff just to how to take care of from a trauma standpoint. But then also we can talk about the disease of non-battle injury things, just the boo-boos that happen, or the cough, the cold, the sore throat. You know, I put out a deal on Instagram once about just, this is a season for sore throats. It's not all COVID. Guess what? So can we talk about, you know, this without getting the CDC mad at us? Yes. Okay. So, you know, we there are other things. So, you know, simple things you can do. Drink some tea with some lemon in it and some honey, and it'll help that sore throat. And it's probably just a virus that's going to go away. It's self-limiting. Boom, 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 boom. And teach those things and understand those things. There are books out there on that stuff.
Yeah.
There's training out there on that stuff. You can come to us. You can direct message me, and I'll tell you what to do. I mean, I'm getting a lot of followers, so it may take me a little while, but I'll get back to you.
Sure.
But the point is that understand that. And here's the most important point of that. When we're talking about, example, Katrina. I went down and helped out with Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we've got a community that is sans hospital. They don't have a hospital right now because it's overrun or it's flooded and they're gone. All right? So what do we do as a community? Well, so-and-so over here is a nurse. Well, then it's community that does it. It's your tribe.
Yeah,
you know, in Oklahoma, I'm from the Nations, and so it's a tribe, right? And so the tribe pitches in and says, hey, I got this skill set. Hey, I can grow maize. Okay, well, let's all get together, and you make popcorn, and I'll help you with your medical stuff, because I'm a shaman, or a witch doctor, not witch doctor, but the tribal doc. But it's that tribe or that thing, that asset that you bring.
Mm-hmm.
So find that person in your community and say, hey, what, you know, do you have some medical stuff? Can you help me? Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't turn you down. I don't turn down people in Oklahoma when a tornado goes through, you know, Lone Grove. And we went over there and helped them out. My community, I didn't have an AMCON community, but I had a neighborhood watch program. We all got together and went and helped.
Yeah.
And we talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that you do. You're Americans. You help each other. I don't care what color you are, what tribe you come from. Just because you're a Choctaw, I'm not going to turn my back on you. I'm a Chickasaw. Okay, that's cool. Let's all be friends. So, you know, that's the thing that I'm talking about, is that layering of medical, but also in your mindset, knowing that I've got to be left of bang. Okay, this is another theory I talk about in my series on mindset and things. So left of bang means like 12 May 2004. I'll give you an example. 12 May 2004, early in the Iraq War, we're driving down the road, three-vehicle convoy. I'm in the middle vehicle, open Humvee with the most antennas on it. Who gets clacked off on the 155 buried in the ground, right? Me, right? So my truck blows up. Unfortunately, lost two guys in my truck. But I walk out of it, and I'm a little bit hurt, but I'm in tunnel vision. First time I've ever really been sucker punched that way in war. I've been sucker punched in a bar many times, and I learned how not to do that. But what did I learn in that bar? Is be left a bang. Like, I see this coming. Huh, no, I'm going to sucker punch him. Same thing in war. Same thing. So that day, 12 May 2004, grid coordinate, Mike Bravo, 456789, for a matter of fact, you can look it up. I don't care. It's not OPSEC. But that's where I'm sitting in a truck that's on fire and blown up. I'm left a bang? No, I'm right a bang. Because bang is the IED or the incident. And left in a timeline series is before and right is after. So now I'm right a bang. And that's not a good place to be because you're in an ambush. Mm-hmm. When you're in an ambush, you're susceptible to being hurt. So left a bang in a tornado senses, you hear the warning go off and you go ahead and get in your cellar and you already have your stuff pre-poed in there and you've already talked to your community on how we're going to do this. And hey, I'm dad and I'm in the Sheriff Reserve Department. I'm going to go out and spot tornadoes, is what I did. Mm-hmm. And I go drive around and look for tornadoes. But I was left a bang because I had all the stuff in my car that was ready to go. All right. So all the stuff in my house, I had a bucket in there so you could piss and poop in the cellar.
Yeah.
I had food in there, I had water in there because I know the community is going to be down for a while. I got a generator sitting in the shop that's going to run my house for the next few days, or an ice storm, or whatever it is in your local community that you have got. Forget about zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about just things that happen. Be left to bang. Things in your car, be left to bang. Drive into a gas station late at night in Dallas, Texas. See this happen. My friend went into this pay for her gas, came back, her vehicle was gone because she left her keys on the seat. Right? Left to bang. Pay attention to who's around you and go, I'm pulling in here. This is a bad place. I'm going to drive around a couple times and see who's watching me.
Yeah,
but most people are complacent. We're kind of, sheepish, and we accept things as it's not going to happen to me because that's called cognitive dissonance, which means I can smoke a 12-pack or 12 packs of cigarettes a day, and I'll never get cancer because I only smoke one pack. Well, that's cognitive dissonance.
Yeah,
you're still I'm dipping. You're still out there saying this isn't going to hurt me today. This is not going to hurt me. It's going to hurt them. I live in Portland, Oregon, and then I'm going to drive down the street and not pay attention to the riot that's going on. Oh, sorry, not riot, peaceful demonstration. I'm going to turn around the corner, and I'm going to be right a bang. Or I'm going to pay attention to what's going on, pay attention to what the AMCON people are telling me, go, I'm not driving down this street. Mm-hmm. I'm going to drive down this street, and I'm going to be safe. That's left a bang. And that's what I would recommend in the whole picture of how you layer your stuff. It's not only tactile or medical supply layering, but it's a mindset layering.
Sure, that same mindset can apply to anything under the larger umbrella of preparedness. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that approach better because a lot of I know you get questions about it. Mm-hmm. I've received questions about it. I know there's other folks who get millions of questions. It's like, what's this piece of gear? What's that piece of gear? What's this piece of gear? Right. What's that piece of gear? And it's like, okay, y'all, there is 100 different manufacturers of every piece of equipment damn near under the sun. Some of them are awesome. Some of them are crap.
Oh, absolutely.
The Chinese one that you're buying from Wish.com may be not the highest quality piece of equipment, but that also doesn't mean you need to spring for the highest end Gucci. I don't want to insult
whatever
the brand.
Yeah.
But so rather than being focused on this piece of gear, or this thing that I can hold in my hand that's going to solve all my problems and be the silver bullet or magic pill, having that thought that I need to be. Incidents do happen, exactly like you said. Having whatever the plan is, but having a damn plan before that incident happens, or at least having what you need to be able to mitigate that problem, to be able to navigate through that situation. If it's an injury type situation, scratches, boo-boos, those types of things, most folks out there, you know how to put on a Band-Aid, how to put a little piece of gauze on something. So rather than being mentally focused on that, thinking about I have that covered. Now what's the next level of injury or sickness illness?
Yeah, and we'll talk about that as a tactical level thing. So there are books out there you can buy.
Mm-hmm.
You can get on the line. All right, get on the line, like they said in that movie, Google, whatever it is, and then you can get on the line and you can find a book that will teach you or tell you, like a cookbook, just a little book, put it in your Medi-Kit for your preventative medicine type stuff or your boo-boos and ouchies, and have that in there so you can reference that with your equipment that's in there and go, that's how I use that. Oh, or get online and watch a video. Like, yeah. There's videos out on there on everything.
There's a ton of training.
Freaking take apart a DC-7. DC-8, now I'm aging myself. But it's you can watch anything and learn anything. We're putting out stuff on Fieldcraft's side today, actually, on content on the kits that we sell. Mm-hmm. And I'll be doing that today. So those are out there already. So get left bang on that and start learning what this stuff is. And you don't have to be an expert at it, but just learn.
Yeah,
maybe take a class if you want. But if you can't, just learn what it is. Because that tourniquet, I promise you, if you've never taken it apart, never used it, and then you're shot.
It's not the time to learn.
Or you're out brush hogging and a blade comes loose and cuts across your leg, and it's happened. I've taken care of them in the ER, in Podunk, Oklahoma. I've done it. I've seen it. Got run over by a combine or run over by a tractor tire. Okay, you're not a trauma surgeon, but you can at least stop the bleed. Mm-hmm. There's a stop the bleed program. Look it up. That's important. I'm stamping my foot. Stop the bleed. Look it up. It's important because it gives you the resources to go to say, what can I do?
Right.
Because all bleeding eventually stops, but you want to be the one to stop it.
Yep.
Right? You don't want to do what we call in the medical world, exsanguinate. It's a bad word.
I was going to try and say it, but I wasn't confident enough. So yeah. I'm glad you did.
I did learn a few words as a grunt, and that's one of them, exsanguinate. Don't do that. Don't bleed out. That's what that means. But there are ways to do that, but you got to be left bang. You can't do it when it happens because now you're right of bang and you're way right of bang because you sever a femoral artery.
Yeah, you have
2 to 3 minutes. Well, 2 to 3 minutes on that one, seconds up here, and you're out because you're unconscious. Pressure. Oh, yeah. That's a novel idea. Pressure. So it's one of the things you learn. But if you don't ever study it a little bit, just a little bit, study it, and you'll see that there you'll get more comfort, and then your anxiety levels go down.
Yeah.
And then you stay left of bang also in your mind because your situational awareness goes up because you're not heart rate of 190, but your heart rate of 100. Okay, well, that's a zone that you can operate in, but you can't operate in the black zone. According to Dave Grossman, you read that book on killing, on combat, either book, he'll tell you, and it's studies, real medicine, like it's not voodoo. It says in there, and I've experienced it when I got blown up. I went into the zone. Auditory exclusion, tunnel vision, had to shake out of it. Okay, we're in a fight. No, there's rounds coming. Well, this is different than just an explosion, which I'd never been in before either.
Right.
So that changes your whole outlook on things at that moment. I'm right a bang. I got to think. But if I had done this battle drill before, or if I had avoided the IED altogether, that would have been a better day.
Yeah, that's
that's way left a bang.
IEDs are one of the unique facets of the global war on terror that, for a long time we. Yeah. Before I didn't join the Army till 2008, like I said. So coming in, IEDs, that was all we heard back home in the news. Fox News was not the number one name in cable news, but they're still pretty popular. And it was EFPs, IEDs, pressure plates, command wires, remote whatever. We had been exposed to so much of that from the media back here in the States that going into the military when I did after the war had been going on for almost a decade, it was like, I almost wonder if that better prepared the future generation of soldiers because they had seen all the explosions, they had seen the videos, through the course of their training and in doc programs, they were getting education on what to do in those types of scenarios that, guys that were in the initial invasion or first couple years of the war, like
wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
wealth of knowledge.
All of those experiences and lessons learned really benefited the force going forward.
Guys like Mike Glover. Mm-hmm. Kevin Owens, myself in a limited sense on the direct action, but definitely in the medical field, I'm going to tell you, that's a wealth of knowledge you don't want to lose.
Yeah,
because you cannot become enlightened like that. The Zen student and the Zen master, I'll give a story. The Zen student comes to the Zen master and says, "Master, how do I achieve enlightenment where you're at now?" He's like, "Okay, write this down. Huh? Chop wood, haul water." So he does it. He comes back. He's like, "Now that I've chopped wood and hauled water, and I'm almost where you're at." This is years later. "What do I do now?" He's like, "Chop wood and haul water." It's that easy. So don't lose these lessons learned.
Right.
you got to do the work to get there. And that requires studying, listening, listen to a mentor. Somebody's been there. When I got blown up, I came home and went through the Left of Bang program, which is the Marines Combat Hunter course. And then I went through the soft SAT course, which the Army does, and it's soft community, on Left of Bang, and became an instructor. And I started teaching because I had been there.
Yeah.
And then every time I went on a convoy, I was in the first vehicle looking, because I know how to look for things.
Like, right.
When you've been there, when you track a deer the first time and you can't find it and you don't see the rubs and all this stuff, you're like, well, I don't have no idea. And you're walking around, you don't get anything. You're like, well, it's called hunting. It's not called killing. Well, but then you learn to look for these things, these signs, right? These cues. You learn these cues, and that's the same terminology in Left to Bang.
Yeah.
And soft sat. You learn these cues and you go, oh, this is not normal. Like, the woods don't just necessarily have a bark, you know, rubbed off on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a deer here. Oh, okay. And so you learn those things, those cues, which then put you Left to Bang and put you on the side of winning and not getting blown up.
Yeah, that's
great stuff.
It really is.
It's reality.
It is reality. And, mm-hmm. and you know, there's, I think, generational swings. Like, the World War II generation of soldiers have fought, the Vietnam generation of soldiers have fought, and then now the global war on terror.
Right.
Every time following the main portions of these conflicts, or at the end of the war, GWAT's a little different. Mm-hmm. It's been going on for, you know,
20 years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Lifetime for some people.
Yeah, literally.
Careers.
And, yep. And you find that as those soldiers begin to retire and matriculate back into society from the service, they take off the uniform, there's a wealth of knowledge and experience and compassion maybe isn't the right word, but like a moderation of thought and dealing with folks, because you've had to work with people who wanted to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I have sat down and broken bread with people who I've given the opportunity would kill me and not think twice about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're mm-hmm. probably thinking about exactly how they're going to do it.
Right.
Like, man, if I'd known he was going to eat this much, I had to poison the food or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But then you come back into the culture and you see, you know, we have a lot of political strife in the nation right now. It's undeniable. We could go down all the incidents and the root causes, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you see people on the far left, people on the far right, they have their extreme beliefs. They're very passionate about their beliefs. Mm-hmm. But then there's everybody else who's just kind of sitting in the middle, who they have moderate thoughts. They believe reasonable, rational things. They like seeing Old Glory waving in the wind.
Yeah.
It's not offensive to them. The idea of going out and talking to your neighbor, finding out that mm-hmm. maybe that old lady across the street, she is a retired nurse. Mm-hmm. She might not have the most modern knowledge and up-to-date stuff, but those traditional, not homeopathic, but basic medical needs and knowledge, she still has it. I guarantee you there's members of my family who are retired age who can get an IV in an arm faster than any young buck out there.
They've done 20 years of them in their career.
Yeah.
And that is the quintessential. What do we call that when we're in the military and we're preparing for a mission? And it's the most important part of the information part is the information preparation of the battlefield, mm-hmm. the IPB. We call that in our MDMP process, this long, drawn-out process, which you know about, which sucks for officers, of which I was. But it's imperative that we do that IPB, information preparation. So in your civilian sense,
mm-hmm.
I got to know who my neighbors are. Mm-hmm. I got to know, like, what if that old lady needed some help when something really happened? I got to know that she lives there. Like, there are people that live in neighborhoods that don't even know their neighbors. You know, and I don't understand that because I come from a place where I know there are 3,000 people in town, and I know 2,999 of them,
right?
And they know me. So, you know their asset, their liability. You know their mm-hmm. strengths, their weaknesses. You know what they bring, what they can't bring. You know that, you know, they got a lot of weapons and guns and ammo and stuff. Okay, that's great, but, you know, what can you really bring me?
Yeah.
Like in a tornado, we're not going to shoot the tornado, so what can you do? So that IPB is so important because that leads you to the information that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can go, and we take it to the next level in the military sense, the enemy forces and the, you know, friendly forces. And we go, okay, friendly forces, I've got this. Enemy is tornado. Okay, got it. All right, so friendly, boom. We have this asset, this asset, this asset. Down the line, we mm-hmm. know our community. In our AMCOM world, we know that too. And you guys are doing a good job of that. So now we know who to go to, who the go-to person is. Because in your world, let's just say, in the PSYOP world, when you went to a village, was the chieftain of the village necessarily the person that you went to?
Not always.
And that's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Because you found that go-to person that was willing, not for the wrong reasons, because sometimes they could be, and sometimes you might sway them with certain things that, you know, candy that you throw out there. But but for the most part, there are good people out there that really want to help and really appreciate the fact that you're there to de oppresso liber, you know, to free the oppressed. And they believe in you, and you are here to do that, and they see that in you, like, you're really here to do that, Doc. Wow, you know, I've taken care of Taliban leaders' kids, right? And they declared a ceasefire on me because I'm taking care of them, and I'm not going to die today.
Right.
I've had them say, well, you're a Christian, I can kill you. I'm like, yes, you can. But I got your kid right now, so you don't want to kill me. You know. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there thinking about how I got to kill him in case he does it.
Yeah.
And that's a strange place to be in the medical sense, but that's where I lived in many different places. And but it's that I got to know who that go-to person is and what their skill is, what their asset is, you know, their capabilities, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we continually encourage people to do is simply get out there.
Network.
You know, it is, it's network. It's building a network development. You put down, you use the locals app. You use the screens that you have access to on your computer, or your mobile phone, whatever the case may be, to reach out and connect with people. But then the expectation is that put the damn phone down. Yeah, you may need to use it to coordinate, to figure out where y'all are going to go train or meet up, or just hang out, or whatever the case may be. But then have that human interaction, have that face-to-face engagement, spend the time in, you mentioned the mind being a part of the triangle that you need, or the three-legged stool take care of. And, you know, there's, I'll use my dad as an example. He lives in, you know, a suburban area, semi-urban area.
Right.
And he knows just about every damn person on his street.
Right.
And is every person on his street a great moral, upstanding citizen of society that pays their taxes?
Probably not.
Exactly. Right. And but you wouldn't know that otherwise unless you get out there and get involved. So that doesn't mean that they're bad people or whatever, but
they're not aligned with you, but in some sense they could help you. Still.
Exactly. They're still human beings.
Yeah.
They may have a need, they may have an ability to assist you, or you can assist them. And you build that network and that net of people. It's not, there's a thought out there that, you know, in an AMCON group, everybody's got to be best buds with everybody. That's not a realistic expectation.
Not necessary. Yeah.
In teams, you know, PSYOP team is only three people. I've been in situations where there's one person on the team that is just, I was like, what are we doing here, y'all? Right. It's at least, you know, I always got a little jealous of the ODAs because there was, you know, 12 guys on a team, and so they could kind of splinter off into their little groups. But with a PSYOP guys, it's just like, fuck, bud, we're stuck with each other, and that's it. But, you know, but you find a way to work through it.
Yeah.
You find the common ground that, because you are going to agree on things. You are going to unite around things. There's ideas or objectives that you can stay focused on. And that same principle, I think, applies in your own community where the 12 houses on your street aren't all going to be having Sunday dinner, but you can at least say, hey, when the next tornado blows through Moore, because it's going to happen right down 4th Street.
Yeah.
I have a generator, you know, you don't have a generator. Can you do me a favor? Can we get some extra diesel fuel?
Chainsaws.
Something trucks, to keep. Yep. And fuel. Begin to work together because those incidents will happen. Just like you said,
and that is perfect example.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, and brought something to mind is, you know, in the special operations world, in our mission sets, you know, everybody always thinks direct action, right? Direct action, which, you know, kick a door and go shoot a bad guy in the face, and I got it. Yeah, there's a need for that.
Yeah.
But a Green Beret is a little bit different in the sense that, and I'm, you know, biased. I wanted to be a Green Beret since I saw John Wayne in the Green Berets movie, you know, which is an old hanky movie. You know, it's kind of funny, but it's good. As a kid, I was, like, enthralled. But our thing is really unconventional warfare and foreign and internal defense, depending on who the customer is.
Yeah.
Right. But they align with the needs of the United States, right? So we pick that team and we go, all right, unconventional warfare in Afghanistan, perfect example. First wave in, defeat the Taliban unconventionally, and then a Taliban government comes in. Now we switch over to foreign internal defense, FID, right? So along those lines, and in counterinsurgency operations, along those lines, what is the center of gravity for those things, really? Another rhetorical question. People.
Yeah.
It's not the government. It's not the government in America. The center of gravity of America is people. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget, you know, the state or the community is really the center of the gravity. it's not the federal government. They can argue and pontificate and bellyache all they want, but they focus on things that are just a waste of time sometimes. But it's the people that mm-hmm. really are the center of gravity, and the only place that I can affect change right now is locally.
Yeah,
in my community. You know, I affect change in different ways. Now that I have a following on Instagram, there's an affecting of change there in that, you know, they call it influencer. I don't know that I'm influencing anybody, but I'm showing them my way to do something.
Right.
Which is just Pete's way, you know, Doc's way. It may not be right, but it's what I do in order to keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Rocky Balboa says. You know, life ain't all a box of roses or whatever, you know, a box of chocolates. It's, you know, you're going to get hit. The key is to keep getting up, keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yeah.
That's my, you know, my thing is, my saying is look for work.
Yeah.
The mantra of CQB, of close quarter battle, look for work. But you can do that in any walk of life. Look for work in your communities. Look for work. Like you said, I saw a post the other day on Instagram. It was awesome. I don't even know who this guy is. It showed a picture of a before and after. And the before was like this field with all this trash. Mm-hmm. And the after was him sitting in front of it with a bunch of garbage bags filled with that trash.
Yeah.
And it's all clean behind him. I reposted that to my story because I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. Look for work. You are a positive influence on your community. You yourself, probably some other people helped him. But the image of before and after was so drastic, so like moving to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I do believe in taking care of, we're a steward of this. I'm a Christian. I believe we're a steward of this earth. Mm-hmm. So if we're a steward of it, forget about global warming and all that stuff. Just be a steward. It'll be fine. But before and after, moving.
I saw that same picture you're talking about. Yeah, and it really is, because what does it cost you other than maybe a couple hours of your time? And that's
adopt it. A highway.
Yeah.
You know, go to a, my mom used to do this. She's older now and she can't do this, but she was a volunteer at a hospital and she did the Pink Ladies, I think it was called, where they would go take flowers up to people. But then mm-hmm. she would also go to the veterans' homes and sit down with somebody that didn't have family.
Yeah.
And there were some amazing people that I used to go visit with her. This one guy that was in World War I, this black gentleman who was in World War I, who had a Purple Heart signed on his wall by General Black Jack Pershing, you know, or Colonel Pershing at the time. I'm like, this is history. Like, go out and look for work. Find somebody that you can uplift, be positive influence in your community. And my mom can't do that anymore because she's older now, but that's what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Every one person did that, you know. I mean, I adopted a boy, and I'm not going to, you know, tell you I'm a great person for doing it, but he was a boy that didn't have really a family back home.
Yeah.
He's a black kid that ran track with my son. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with him. We did. We brought him into the family. We raised him, and now he's running for the University of Oklahoma track team.
That's awesome.
You know, I mean, it's different life that he would have had.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, you got to affect change locally.
Mm-hmm.
But you really got to do it. You can't talk about it.
Yeah, talking about it's one thing. It's getting off the bench, you know, that's the whole reason this organization exists, is to give folks a reason to get off the bench, something positive to unite around. We share a lot of the same American ideals. We share a lot of the same, you know, patriotic values. Right. And really, I hope this talk has been encouraging to everyone here, because, Doc, you have a wealth of knowledge, and I hope folks seek you out wherever you're putting out content on the Fieldcraft side or on your own personal mm-hmm. pages. And you know, look to Doc as a resource. Doc, you know, I'm not going to tell people to ask you questions. You told them to ask you questions. I don't want to throw that
on
you.
When I can.
Yeah, it is. It takes time to go through. And I mean, mm-hmm. you several thousand people or 100 people, you get 20, 30 questions a day. And it's like, man, I still got a life to live here. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to be a positive influence in my community.
So be patient with me.
Come on, y'all. What camera are we on? Camera one. So, yeah. Hey, any final thoughts, closing wisdom, Doc?
Final thoughts, closing wisdom. Don't squat with your spurs on, all right? And always drink upstream of the herd. But honestly, go out, look for work, mm-hmm. be an American, be real. I will be real. Sometimes I say things that hurt, but that's tough love.
Yeah.
But it's the lieutenant colonel coming out of me at that point and not the private E2 chambers that came in. but look for work. And I promise you will affect change locally. And it'll trickle up, and then your well-being, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, family-wise, will be better for it.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thank you, Doc.
Roger that.
Bye, everybody.
Catch y'all later.